This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
A good story makes you feel. That's the engine of stories. Lessons in feeling. That's how the playwright John Osborne described his work. In the 1950s, his play Look Back in Anger was at the vanguard of a new wave of realism in British theatre. Sheila Delaney had failed the 11 plus, but a visionary teacher and a council-funded library theatre encouraged her to write. At just 19 years old, her play A Taste of Honey premiered to runaway success. It was a time where working-class stories and experiences were elevated to centre stage. There's even a Monty Python sketch where Graham Chapman is upset with his son Eric Idle's decision to be a coal miner rather than follow him into the working class job of playwright. That was nearly 70 years ago. Are things any better now? Is the playing field more equal? Welcome to Margins to Mainstream with Michael Sheen. That's me. But this series isn't about me. It's about 11 writers with voices that deserve to be heard. Voices that have had the volume turned to mute until now. The writers were selected for A Writing Chance, a project I developed with New Writing North and the Joseph Rowntree Foundation, seeking fresh perspectives and great stories from people whose voices have historically not been heard. In this, the last episode, you'll meet Anna Maxwell. The playwright Sian Owen was her mentor, and you'll hear from her too. And we'll finish with a performance of Anna's work by myself, live from the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama in Cardiff. Anna's story begins in the 70s, 20 years after the explosion of Britain's working-class theatre scene.
I grew up in the northwest in quite a small village, and, you know, it was a nice place, really, but it was kind of like living in a goldfish bowl, if I'm honest. It was a bit like everybody knows your business and, you know, everybody knows who everybody else is, which can obviously have its benefits, but also with my family, we kind of stuck out like a bit of a sore thumb, really. My dad's half Iraqi and everybody else in the village was white. And as I grew older, I became more and more aware of that and the way that other families treated us. So I think that has had a knock-on effect on my confidence and self-belief, really, and that's probably then in turn had an impact on the writing and not believing that I'm good enough. I do believe it started to slowly erode my self-worth and self-confidence, which has had an impact on the rest of my life. You know, life is a series of consequences, and I think it's ultimately affected how I believe in myself. I'm believing that I am and can be a good writer. I kind of written for pleasure, but also I've realised, you know, as I've been on the project and looking back, you know, I kind of used it in quite a therapeutic way from quite an early age. One of the things that springs to mind, I've remembered a poem that I wrote. I would have been 17. It wasn't long after I'd passed my driving test, and a rabbit ran out in the road, and it must have been somebody's beloved pet because it was a white rabbit, and it hit the car, and oh, I was absolutely distraught, and I went home. Don't even know if I told anybody about it, but I just sat down and I wrote a poem about it. I've written like that through my life and also the creative writing, but I suppose life has got in the way. The barriers that I've faced are, again, it's the self-belief. Or if I'd ever voiced, oh, I wouldn't mind being a journalist or a writer, getting shot down straight away, really, as if I was saying I wanted to be a famous pop star.
3 or 4 years ago, Anna's youngest daughter started secondary school. It was time for some self-care.
I saw a little advert in the library advertising a creative writing class. There's no qualification attached to it or anything. It was just a local education class. And I thought, you know, I'm going to give that a go. I've always loved writing. It'd taken a bit of a back burner with bringing up children. So it's time for me to do something for me. I'll admit I was a little bit apprehensive. I didn't know who the other people were going to be. Was my writing going to be good enough? And I thought, well, do you know, I've got nothing to lose. I'm not getting any younger. So I just threw myself into that and, you know, really enjoyed it. So I continue to do that now. It's only a couple of hours on a Friday morning, and there's a lot of people that re-enroll. So we have quite a supportive group in there. I do it in a way of helping me to deal with my emotions. if I've got a difficult issue going on, I'd write about it. Don't have to censor myself, because it is good to talk. But if I know I'm writing something that I'm not ever planning to share with anybody, I can write no holds barred, get all that out. And rather than either talking to a therapist or a friend or whatever, you know, I can get it out on the page.
It was through the writing group's supportive community that Anna found out about a writing chance.
When I got the call to say that I was through, my daughter thought that we had won the lottery. I was screaming. I was like, yeah! You know, I was so happy and so thrilled. It's just given me such a motivation. And I finally have been given the message, you are good enough.
Anna's been working with Sian Owen, the playwright. I've worked with Sian too. She wrote some new material for the production of Under Milk Wood that I did at the National Theatre last year. Sian grew up in Newport, South Wales, the town where I was born. Sian's terrible, by her own admission, teenage poetry and songwriting turned to drama in her early 20s.
I studied lots of plays doing A-levels and then at uni, and there were just no stories ever about the kind of place I was from, the kind of people I knew, even like wider family, like my dad's from the Valleys and we'd always be up there visiting family. And I just thought like the stories are so rich, but there was no one telling them. So that was one of the reasons why I started to write, because there was never anything about us.
200 miles up the UK, Anna had felt the same. The two found common ground easy to come by.
We're just not from those typical kind of writing backgrounds. We're women, for a start, but also just the kind of backgrounds we came from, the kind of class. We don't really fit the mould in terms of how our lives are as well. Like, we've got life responsibilities and we're juggling lots of things, complex life. My initial reaction to reading Anna's work, I was just so taken and drawn into her world. I had to read it twice straight away. It was such a unique, strong piece of writing, and it was as if it was so real, just full of brilliant observations. And she's got such a strong, unique voice, and she has such a strong sense of place and character. And I was just completely drawn in, and there was a real element of heart and truth. And I was just completely blown away, actually. It was very impressive. And I just thought that there was something really special about Anna and her writing.
Sian helped Anna with structure, story, the nuts and bolts of a dramatic monologue, but got something back in return.
And I just loved her absolute bravery and desire and drive for truth. And so she gave me a fire back in my writing, which I'll be forever thankful for. And so it really helped me think about my work as well. And even just down to like going back to the basics of structure and how you write a play and tell a story, I relearned lots. So it was a wonderful experience.
Before you hear our final performance, here's Anna on its inspiration.
The initial idea came from in my creative writing class. Basically, we were given a postcode. We put the postcode into an app on Google, and you would see a picture of where that postcode was. So some people might have been getting a nice, lovely looking building or a busy city. When I got mine, it was an empty car park. And I can remember thinking, oh, thanks for that. That's really stimulating my creative juices, you know. But anyway, ultimately, I started to think about, okay, well, who could be visiting this car park? Could somebody have some memories here? So I just really tried to get into this person's head. You know, what is he thinking? What's he feeling? And we just hear his story and how his life is unravelling.
Here's an extract from Square Peg by Anna Maxwell, performed by me in front of a live audience at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama in Cardiff.
I need to get it all off my chest. I can talk to myself now without worrying they can hear me, because I know they'd think I was weird, but I've always done it. Why can't people just leave me alone? It's like when that other pair had come sticking their beaks in, one social worker, one nurse, mental health, whispering behind their masks they were. Socially distanced, of course. And they were acting like I wasn't there half the time, or treating me like a kid. One asked, am I stuck in the past? And I thought that was rude, and I told them no. No, it's true about reminiscing in lockdown. I read an article about it. They were saying things like vulnerable adult and highly functioning to each other as if I didn't know what they were talking about. I mean, Dad did used to call me a square peg. Not in a nasty way. It's just I never quite fitted in. And they were asking all sorts, scribbling it all down in their pads. I don't think there's anything wrong with being 47, never married, and always lived at home. The one with the black hair died. Too harsh for a colouring. Suzanne, I think she said. She's the nurse wanting to know all about my background, early memories and that. She was doing most of the talking. And she reckoned I'm stuck in my childhood with repressed emotion. And she said, so, tell us what you remember about your mum. What are your last memories of her? So I said to her, I went to the car park yesterday, the one where the little chef used to be. Do you know it? She nodded, sunken eyes, clocking everything. I said it was deserted, sign up, closed due to COVID. I like it there, I said. I mean, I know it should be a sad place, really, but it's where I've always gone to remember mum. And I think sometimes she might be there waiting for me. And I remember Dad now as well, I said, but at least I know what happened to him with the COVID. I tell them about Dad starting with the cough first and how I felt bad because I'd been cursing him for the relentless dry barking and saying, how the hell was he still managing to dribble like a drugged dog? And I said, I'd do anything to hear that cough now. And I told them about the app you can get of a COVID cough, and I listen to it sometimes because it reminds me of Dad. And I said, is that weird? None of them said anything. So I carried on, and I told them I still feel sad that Mum and Dad's marriage had turned into them playing pass the parcel with me in a car park. They both nodded. I said it was like they used to hand me over like a baton in a relay race, wanting the exchange to be as fast and smooth as possible. And then one day, it was like Dad dropped the baton because Mum just wasn't there to grab me. And we stood there for about an hour, like condemned men. Then Dad just said, come on, lad, she's not coming. Let's get you a fish dinner. And we sat in the little chef like it was our last meal.
Thank you very much for joining us on Margins to Mainstream with Michael Sheen. Over these 11 episodes, we've seen that not everyone's experiences on these islands are the same. And as human beings, we all deserve to hear different perspectives and new stories that better reflect the experiences and concerns of people in this country. Everyone deserves a writing chance. You've been listening to a Working Word production for BBC Sounds, hosted by me, Michael Sheen. Today's episode featured Anna Maxwell, and thanks to Sean Owen. Written and produced by Dan Tite and James Nee. Mixed by Di Shell. Cover artwork by Tim Horton. And thanks to Andy Gotts for photography. Research by Morgan Morton and Ethan Blake.